Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 138 is coming at you right now. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Howdy, everybody. This is episode number 138. I am your host, The Brant, and with me is...
your co-host, Kathy.
All right, and this episode is entitled...
Just because something works doesn't mean it can't be improved. That is a quote from the Black Panther. Shuri says that.
Awesome. We're going to be talking about game storage. I guess more putting games away. We're going to talk a little bit about the cleanup of games in our wrap-up today for the episode. So... there is that. Howdy, everybody. We're excited. We just applied for our media badges for PAX Unplugged, so we should be there. Brian's got a badge already. Larry's got a badge already, so hopefully Kathy and I will not be just staring longingly into the hall. But we will be there. I'm sure we'll be fine. If we don't get media badges, we will get them some other way. But we will be at PAX Unplugged the first full weekend in December. I'm not really sure. It's not the weekend right after Thanksgiving. It's the one after that, so... it's like December 6th through the 8th. So as I said, Kathy will be there, I will be there, Brian will be there, and Larry will be there. So that should be a fun drive down, a good time, playing games, hanging out. I think I'm just going to try to just play games and hang out this year. Instead of taking meetings and visiting with people, I'm just going to make my rounds on the booths and hang out.
Cool.
So should be a good plan. I'm sure that's what you'll do. Well, actually, you talked to a lot of booths last year.
I did.
So you're pretty good on that front. Cool. So, Kathy, you have been taking... no, you have started up again with your Ariel classes. So tell us about Ariel.
Ariel. Not that Ariel. I've decided to run away and join the circus.
Nice.
I just haven't done the running away part yet.
Please don't.
So I'm learning how to do the silks. Which,
please describe.
It's very difficult to describe. It's these big, long ribbons that come down from the ceiling, and you have to climb and learn all these different tricks and wraps and way to climb.
It's, I feel like it's really kind of a Cirque du Soleil thing.
It's very much a Cirque du Soleil thing.
Yeah. So you have cloth.
Yes.
Silk suspended from the ceiling.
Yes.
It's very strong, and it holds you up, and you are literally, as Ariel described, you are in the air.
Yes, very much in the air.
Being held up, doing various...
acrobatic...
tricks?
Sure.
More like illusions?
Not illusions, no, no.
Gotcha.
It's magic, straight up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. And that's been going well? You enjoy that?
Yes, I do enjoy it a lot.
Cool. Yeah, that's what's going on. We've got the Extra Life Game Day this weekend at the store, which may or may not have Kathy at it. We're waiting to see on children and where children will be. I will be there all 24 hours. Brian will be there more than 24 hours running it. There's tournaments. I'm pretty excited. There's a Tiny Towns tournament. There's an Unmatched tournament, which is one of my favorite games from the year.
Nice.
I probably won't play in the tournament because I don't usually play in tournaments. But maybe I will if there's an extra spot. And, there was another one that I thought was a really good idea that I can't remember what it is. But there's another one that's a really good idea, and I can't think of what it is. Also,
perfect.
Just wanted to give a shout-out to Doug, Carl, and... oh, no. I'm forgetting his name. I forgot the third guy's name, who made Kapow from Two Ton Porcupine, because their game got picked up by White Wizard Games.
Awesome.
They had a tournament... Larry's the other one. Sorry. And they had a tournament in our store, and they had released the game themselves, and now it's getting, you know, worldwide distribution. So that's just kind of a cool connection that we have. I think one's not from Connecticut. I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
But, yeah, that's a really cool element.
Nice.
We just talked about Carl's game Merchant's Cove a little while ago that got picked up for Kickstarter from Final Frontier Games, We're looking forward to playing some Final Frontier games like Rise to Nobility and Coloma.
Yes.
So, that should be there. That's awesome. All right, so Kathy, what has been my favorite game of 2019?
Fleet the Dice Game.
Yes, I've talked about it a little bit. I have made this my mission for this year, and I have taught every media person and designers and anybody I could come across of that would be willing to play this game. So, the designers are the Fleeples, which is Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback, and they have a follow-up to Fleet the Dice Game, and it is called...
Three Sisters.
Yes, Three Sisters. And we got a prototype of this game. Now, I'm not one to normally play prototypes, but a roll and write, where you basically are getting paper anyway that looks fancier than prototype paper. You know, supply your own dice wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
And a couple pieces, pencils. It wasn't really a major, undertaking to produce this game. So we've got a chance to play. Now, by no means are we going to review Three Sisters, because it's not even published yet.
Right.
Still in prototype form. But... in a little bit of talking with Matt Riddle and other things and getting a chance to play the game, they were saying they want to make a follow-up to Fleet the Dice Game that feels different, but still makes you feel like you're in that same vein. I think they did.
Yeah.
So Three Sisters refers to crop rotation, I suppose you would say.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to plant corn, which puts... nitrogen in the soil. I'm not sure if I'm getting it all right. For beans, which then oxygenate to put squash, in this case pumpkins, in, and you can rotate those three crops. That sounds right to me because I feel like corn comes relatively early in the season. I guess beans are mid-season, and then the end of the season would definitely be pumpkins. So,
right.
But these are the three sisters in harvesting or planting. That's what they're famously known as. They can be planted in the same area, same fields, whatever. So, big deal for space-saving time, efficiency, all that kind of stuff. Love me some efficiency. So, this game, it has a rondel. So there's a rondel, and you roll the dice, and then you group the dice, all the ones together, the twos, the fives, the sixes, whatever, and you place them on the next spaces in the rondel from the farmer, and then you draft the dice. So that, very much the drafting the dice feels like Fleet Dice, but you're not making nearly the same decision that you are with Fleet Dice. So in this one, you got a big spreadsheet of your garden where you can plant your corn and your beans and your pumpkins. You have to plant corn before pumpkins. Nope, corn before beans, and it has to grow to a certain height. Then you've got, your apiary, which is your beehive, and you've got your fruit garden, and you've got the hardware store that you can go to get things, and you're collecting goods. Goods kind of feel like coins, but they also feel different. They're not as plentiful, but the bonus you get is a little more powerful, I would say, at times. You're getting. And then you've got your perennial plants, which are just your flowers that come up and give you bonuses. So you've got all these places to get bonuses, and you're trying to score points and collect goods to get bonus actions. The main thing to know is when you draft those dice, you basically are drafting for two actions, which is really fun because that kind of reminds me of Madeira with the double worker placement, or Raiders of the North Sea would be a lot more common to people, where you place one worker, do the action, pick up another worker, do the action. So that draft is two things. So first off, I'm drafting a number that lets me pick a zone of my garden to either plant seeds or water. And then secondly, I take the action from that rondel space, which might be the hardware store, gain compost, or this, that, the other thing. Not going to go through it all because obviously we'll full review the game. And that's really interesting. In the garden, when you plant, you get two seeds. So you can plant the very bottom box in each thing, or you can choose to water a whole zone, in which case everything grows one box. When it gets to the top, it's harvested, it gives you goods, it gives you victory points, various other things. The fun part is the pumpkins, because the pumpkins have little vines that connect them. And so, what?
You just said that in your sweet voice.
Well, it's very sweet, because you get to draw the little... swoopy vines in.
Yes, you do.
And then when you swoop in the vine, you get a free flower in your perennial garden that you can upgrade. So you're thinking ahead. How am I going to plan all this?
Yep.
There's a lot. It definitely, pretty much what they said is what it was. Like, I felt like I was playing Fleet the Dice Game, but I had no idea what to do. So it's like when I'm reminding myself of when I'm teaching people Fleet the Dice Game for the first time. And there's definitely all these bonuses, and wow, this over here. Timing is a much bigger issue, whereas, like, the timing of when you're going to fish was a big issue, but people could kind of see that. The rain is really important. At the end of the rounds, three rounds, there's rain, and everything will grow naturally, your whole garden. And so you really want to time that out well to the final rainstorm when all that comes. So it was great.
Yeah.
There were some tweaks that we thought, like, boxes go up and boxes go down, and we wanted circles. I mean, these are all little things for them. So my only hesitation was, you put one more die than twice the number of players. It's 2n plus 1. For all you algebra nerds out there. So the one die is left over, just like Fleet Dice, but there's nothing that it does.
Right.
And that's always enjoyable when there's that. What were your thoughts on the game without a full review?
I liked it a lot. I definitely finished and was like, oh, I see now, I want to play again. Because there's, I feel like you learn a lot as you play.
Yeah.
Timing-wise and just what works together.
Yeah, my first game I scored like 88 or 90 points, and my second game I scored like 121.
Right.
So I learned a whole bunch there. So, I mean, as far as, like, comparing it to Fleet the Dice Game, to me, there's no doubt you could have both. They're the same feeling, but they're different. I mean, if people can have 35 rolling rights, there's no reason they can't have these two games. There. In terms of, like, playing them back-to-back, that wouldn't really make sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, they're different, but I would feel like I kind of did the same thing twice. I mean,
a little bit,
some people want to do that. And like, comparing them is also weird, because who cares? Like, is one better than the other? I don't know, but Three Sisters, I want to start playing like crazy now. Like,
right.
Solo mode and all these other things that they've got in there. So this is coming out from their new company. Detroit is the Motor City, is that correct?
Yeah.
Motor City Games. I apologize if I got that wrong. There's a BGG entry for it, and Matt told me, please talk about the game. So this is a 2020 release that they'll be working on, but if... And anyway, first off, you've just gotten a chance to play Fleet the Dice Game. Awesome. If I steered you in the right direction with Fleet the Dice Game in any way, shape, or form, then you definitely want to give this one a look. It's an awesome follow-up to that. So that's just kind of a pre our reviews with the Three Sisters from Motor City Games. So now we're going to cruise through some reviews here relatively quick. We're just going to kind of speed through these. I think, spoiler is, we really enjoy all three of these games we're going to review.
Yeah.
So, this is just a fun, let's just tell you. I don't mind reviewing stuff ahead, like before I tell you about the game. These games are all great. Maybe we'll put them in order when we're done. But it doesn't really matter because, in my mind, they're all great. We're going to start with this one.
All right.
Walking in Burano. So, this is originally from Empress 4, who sadly, at Essenspiel, the money was stolen from their booth.
Seriously?
Yeah, and this is like the fourth or fifth year in a row that somebody has lost money from their booth. So, I mean, the thing is always get a chain, get a fanny pack. You see so many people with fanny packs at conventions now, so Whoa. Stuff doesn't get stolen. So that was sad. So I hope sales went their way. If you were considering buying an Empress 4 game, maybe, you know, make it a little extra push to help them out, because that was a sad situation. But AEG picked up Walking in Burano. So... this is a game about the city of Burano, which is well known for its colorful buildings, and it's a drafting game. So you've got buildings that you're drafting from each turn, and you've got kind of the ground floor, the middle floor, and the roof. And you've got columns of cards that are out, and you can draft one, two, or three from a column. Every card you don't draft, you get a coin instead, and then you spend coins to put cards out in your 3x5 tableau. You're trying to make five houses, three tall each. Once you complete a house, you can then draft a tourist or an inhabitant, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, more like a villager, and they'll go underneath that house and tell you how you're going to score, either for that column, that specific house, sometimes the bottom floor, or sometimes just your whole tableau to some extent, and you will score those items. At the end of the round, all the cards slide forward, you pass the token, and you just keep going. You just draft and draft and draft. Now, the rules are the houses have to be the same color, and two adjacent houses cannot be the same color. But you get little, like, permit tokens that are worth 3 points in the game that you can discard to break the rules. Also, you have to build your houses from the ground floor up, but you get scaffolding cards that can break that rule temporarily. And that's the game. Voila. Like, you're drafting, but the choices are where the game is at. The complexity is not in the structure, it's in the choices. Like, trying to figure out, oh, do I want to collect cats, or do I want to collect hanging plants, or do I want to collect shops,
or awnings.
Yeah, or like, all chimneys. There's all sorts of ways to score. I mean, with villagers and tourists, there's probably like 10 to 12 different ways to score that are out there.
Yeah, I think so.
And so you're trying to figure it out, and then other players are drafting from you, and it's not really AP-inducing, but it's definitely, like, choice, like, thought-inducing. So it's not a quick draft. It's not, boom, boom, done, your turn. Boom, boom, done, your turn. It's right. Like, whoa, okay, this is my big turn to draft here. And the game ends once one player has completed their whole tableau. 3x5. Really, really enjoyable.
Yeah.
Really solid filler-style game. Played great with two.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you just trash the cards at the end of the row, so they're gone, so you rotate through a little bit more. Really simple thing. I've played it with three, and I don't think I played it. I think I played it with three twice, and worked well there. So just a solid little card game here. Has a solo mode that I haven't tried with drafting. What's your impressions? What about the look of the game? How'd you feel? We already said we liked it.
Yeah, it's really colorful. The artwork is very, I don't know what the word is. It's colorful. Yeah, it's colorful.
Endearing?
And cheerful. Quaint, I keep wanting to say.
Oh, quaint is a great word. I imagine Burano is quaint.
Maybe. It has this, I'm looking at this cute little cat first player token that is a kind of 3D cardboard.
Yeah, I wonder what the feline to human ratio in population is there. It seems like felines are highly approved of.
Yeah, so I really liked it.
Yeah, it's really good. It's fun. It's like a comfort game almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like, oh, you could put on warm socks and have a cup of hot apple cider and draft some cards and build your tableau, and it's just comforting. Like, you're getting these points. Honestly, at the end of the game, if you beat me 52-49, I'm like, that's okay. I have cats.
Right?
Like, or whatever.
Sure.
That's not to downplay the strategy in the game, because I think it's actually a pretty decent amount of strategy. You know, Splendor-esque type strategy.
Yeah.
Like, you're thinking things out. You know, Century Spice Road-esque strategy in terms of all that. Probably a little, like, harder on the curve. Right? Like, it's almost like a shorter game to explain and learn, but a little harder to know how to score points well.
Yeah.
You can kind of, like, happen across points in Splendor and Century Spice Road.
Yep.
But this game, you have to kind of to force
plan
the points.
It out.
Yeah, plan the points out. So. Cool. Walking Imperato. AEG. Empress 4. Oh, Weimin Ling is the designer. Cool. All right, next up is Shipwreck Arcana. This is a Kickstarter game that came out from
Miromorph
Games. So Shipwreck Arcana is a co-op deduction game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so your ship has come across ill fate, I believe is what's happened, and you've got all these fate cards that come out with really interesting art, almost like tarot card-esque art,
yeah.
I would say, right? Yeah. It's kind of got that kind of feeling. In terms of what it is, and you are trying to acquire 7 good fate before you get 7 bad fate. And I apologize, I don't know what good and bad fate are rated. And so you're working as a team, you have 7 tiles, 1 through 7. And on your turn, you reach into a bag, you pull out two tiles, and you pick one to put out on the board, and you hold the other in secret. And the players are trying to figure out what your tile is in secret, not necessarily in one turn. That's kind of the key to the game. So there's a bunch of cards out there that'll say, like, place your tile here if it's a 3 and it's lower than your other tile. Place your tile here if you have a pair, I guess makes it obvious. Place your tile here if the 2 tiles sum to 6 or greater, whatever it is. And so then players are trying to deduce what you did. Oh, well, you put a 3 there, so your other tile is greater. But you didn't put it on this one that says the sum is greater than 6, so maybe that means it's a 1, 2, or 3. And you're doing all that kind of deduction that I don't think a podcast is a great place to try to describe or show off. And then players take your, you have your 1 through 7 tiles in front of you, and they kind of flip them over once they've determined what's happening. It's really clever, though, because you need to read beyond the card they placed it on. You need to read, why didn't they place it on this card?
Right.
And you're hoping that everybody is capable of figuring out what their best play is. We've been in that boat. Everybody we've played with has basically made their best play every time. Or it's a 50-50 play. You don't have any options, one or the other. Like, these are both equally good. And then players have to deduce from there.
Although, I feel like we had played a couple of times and we played with someone new. And so most of the players were saying, oh, I can see why you went there because
right.
You couldn't have gone here.
They could deduce the second layer.
And the person playing the tile was like, oh, really? You saw all that out of what, like,
Right.
So if there's a dichotomy of people playing this game, it would be, I don't know, trickier.
Absolutely. Yeah, you need, like, with this type of co-op, this is a co-op where I feel like you could really let the other team down. The rest of the team down. And some people, that's the reason they won't play co-ops. It's not actually, they don't like the alpha player who will tell them what to do.
Right, this one.
Or they don't like cooperating. It's they're nervous that they will be the weakest link.
Right.
And this one has the opportunity to do that. But I've won every game I've played.
Yeah.
So, clearly I'm not the weakest link. or I've only chosen to play with strong links. But anyway, yeah, it's clever in that. My one thing would be that I've won every game. I don't really care if I win a co-op all the time. I don't want it to be a cakewalk and it's irrelevant. And this game is not a cakewalk.
No, it's been close.
You're always thinking and going, okay. Once you complete the cards, you then get the cards that have special abilities. Like, hey, show your tile if you have a 7. And then people can deduce a little bit more. So you get a little extra deduction for doing things right. But it's a solid little game. I could see it, like, somewhat playing itself out. There's plenty of cards, there's plenty of chance, even if you know the same cards, the deduction's there. But by the time I've played it twice in a row, I'm not really looking to play it again in a night.
Yeah.
And if I played it every week, right, it's kind of one of those games I want to come out every so often.
Right.
But there's nothing wrong with that. But it's really different. It is very different, yeah. Yeah, there aren't a lot of deduction games that are like co-op deduction and everybody's trying to figure out, and then they're trying to think in their head, what would you do? It's almost got a little bit of that, like, code names. Why would you make this decision? How are you thinking? And all that kind of stuff.
There's nice wooden tiles. They're really colorful. They all have a different design on the back of them. Yeah, I like how...
Yeah, so we're big fans of little games. Shipwreck Arcana. Like we told you, we like all the games. Probably my favorite of the three. Perhaps, is Skulk Hollow. So Skulk Hollow is a pencil first games game. It is a two-player only game, and it is the woodland creatures rising up. There's actually a different name. But the woodland creatures rising up against the evil villains. And so one person plays these large, hulking, you know, bears and mountain and poisonous worms. And the other player plays these fox. I think actually they're called the Foxen. Mm-hmm. So they play the Foxens, which is a very, like, 70s Disney art. It looks like Fox and the Hound.
It's
and
totally Robin Hood characters.
Yeah, Robin Hood characters from the Disney Robin Hood movie, which is, I think, your favorite Disney movie?
Nope.
Oh.
But I like it a lot.
Every town
yep.
has its ups and downs. All right, anyway. Nottingham.
Yes.
This is a singy episode.
Have we sung?
Sing us something, Kath.
No, thank you.
Can you sing something on the podcast for us?
Not right now.
You're like an amazing singer.
I have nothing to sing at the moment. Oh, we're talking goodness. About Skulk
She's
Hollow.
A way better singer than me, and I'm singing away. All right. So, Skulk Hollow is a two-player asymmetric game. So, one side has all these little fox and creatures, and they're running all around this... It's a 3x3 grid, but you play out as a diamond. So, you move, like... it's like, take a 3x3 grid and twist it. So it's diamond shape instead.
Yeah, the movement was weird to get used to.
And so you move diagonally up to the right or diagonally up to the left or straight ahead. And essentially each, like, bad guy has a different win condition. Oh, go collect these tokens or just eliminate them so many times. The Foxen just keep coming. You've just got a deck of cards. They just keep coming. And they're just trying to, they can actually leap from the space where the bad guy is into, onto him or her. And you've got a giant board that they can then climb up. There's a video game like Shadow of the Colossus. I have no idea. But people always reference it when I hear him talk about this game. So there was some like PS4, who even knows, game. This is how extensive my video game knowledge is. Where you do this, where you climb up the big things and you try to take them out. And that's what you're doing here. So if you wound every spot, they're done. You win the game. So that's the Foxen win condition. The Foxen, however, are asymmetric in that they have different leaders that have different powers. It's very much an abstract game in its approach. It's not abstract because of the theme, but it's play this card to move this pawn forward this many spaces and then do this thing. And all the cards have two abilities, which is great. It's a little Gloomhaven-esque, like, ooh, do I want to do this or don't I want to do this? And you get a certain number of actions, so you're trying to chain those together. One of the actions is to gain, like, power cubes that you can use on future turns. So you can kind of save up your actions to have more on a later turn to make a big move. That's essentially it. But the art is wonderful. The production's really good. Little wooden tokens with all painted stuff on it. I have played three of the, I've been the bad guy every time. And I've played three of the asymmetric characters. They all feel pretty different. The one where you have to go, I think it's the worm, where you have to just go collect the stones is a little boring. Like, it's not very exciting, but it has the poison, the other person, and all this stuff. It's kind of really nasty on that approach.
Yeah.
But it really surprised me. I really enjoyed it as a two-player game. Now, in the grand scheme of two-player games and all the possibilities, where does this one kind of fall for you in that unending realm of games?
It's light.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun. It was pretty quick.
It's pretty quick. It says 40 minutes on the box, and we were probably playing in 30.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's not my favorite game, but I like to play it. I would.
But when you think of like two-player games like Patchwork and Keyforge and Ashes and recently Foothills and I don't know other two-player games off the top of my head, but stuff like that.
It doesn't feel like any of those.
Lost Cities. So you'd play it as a two-player game because it doesn't feel like any of those other games that we play.
Right.
As two-player games. Yeah, that's a great read.
Yeah.
It's a thematic abstract.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in a good way. Like, right. I'm not trying to say abstract in a bad way, but instead of just, hey, these pieces can move here and these can attach here, you know, it's, oh, these are actually pieces moving up and trying to block these spaces to eliminate them in terms of that. Yeah, so there's a really great game here. Now, I had heard, I think it was on the Dice Tower podcast, that there are, like, expansion good guys. There's, like, I don't even know. I apologize. But like pandas or badgers. My gosh, if there were raccoons, can you imagine? I'd be all over this thing. But yeah, they come in little tuck boxes, which are so nice.
Yeah.
And you've got these player boards. Everything's pretty well spelled out. You don't really need the rulebook. The rulebook has a couple things that are left to be desired that it doesn't spell out very well. But when you look at the player aids are great because you never have to reference the rulebook after that. Once you read the rulebook, everything's on the player aids.
Yeah.
So you take a player mat for each faction. And even it was so smart as to whatever character I'm playing, whether it be the specific hero leader or the bad guy, I hand a card. They gave a second card for reference to the other player. So now I know all of your abilities.
Yep.
Which is really, really good thinking. So, yeah, that's Skulk Hollow from Pencilverse Games. Another great game.
I have to say one thing about it, though.
Okay.
So, when you first showed me this game, just looking at the cover, I didn't want to play it.
Yeah, the cover makes it look a little bit more like a horror game.
Yeah. It's very strange, because then you open it up, and it's like colorful and
yeah,
yeah, like that 70s art, like you were saying, and there's like little cottages and streams and yeah, so the looking at the cover, you were like, oh, I want to play this with you, and I said no. And then I saw
she says no a lot.
I do.
Which is good. You're discerning.
I'm discerning. I feel no obligation to play any game. Except Star Wars Legends.
Kathy Sanderson, podcaster. I quote, I feel no obligation to play any game. That's a wonderful place to be. I love it. I love it. I feel obligated to play games. So if you're a publisher and you're listening and you're thinking of sending us a review copy, I am obligated to play that game and review it. Which Pencil First did send this to us. Full disclosure, as people like to say. But Kathy felt no obligation to play it.
I didn't.
She shouldn't.
So, but
you're like the color commentary.
Let me finish my what I was saying. But then I saw it out on the table, and I said, oh, I would play that. And I didn't even realize it was this game.
Yeah, no, it's a good point now that I'm looking. The edges have the
but barely.
Right, and little meeples.
Not really.
Much better. Even that looks scary. But yeah, this cover is completely different,
like
artwork.
Horror.
Which is a weird choice to make.
Yeah.
In terms of all that. But cool. All right. Three awesome games. So for our discussion segment, we're going to talk about packing up games. Putting games away and storing them.
Yes.
Now, cleaning up games is one of your favorite pastimes.
That seems to be putting it a little strongly.
But you do,
but
like...
But I enjoy it.
Yeah, you do enjoy it. Not that you're looking to put games away.
And I love a game that has good storage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes me so happy.
Right. So yeah, a lot of games have custom inserts. That works really well, and those are really nice. But like, I'm not afraid of baggies. Like, I like baggies, bagging everything up. I like to make a bag that has all the, like, beginning pieces. This is the start player marker, the round marker, the initial money that people are going to get, the trackers for various things throughout the game. I'll put all that in one bag, store that up, or use those little cups that are, like, 10 cents from the dollar store. Work really well. Now, you made us an awesome insert. Tell us about your insert that you made.
Oh, I made an insert for Gloomhaven because that game needed an insert.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of YouTube videos giving examples and stuff like that, and then kind of made it my own out of foam core board and glue and pins.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that has drastically changed the way we play that game.
Well, yeah.
Because we can now be at dinner and say, do you want to play this game tonight? Yeah. While one of us is getting Zephyr ready for bed, the other person can set the game up in 10 minutes?
Yeah.
It's pretty fast. I mean, sometimes, like, shuffling a few decks and finding those, but you've got it all alphabetized.
Yeah.
So you just find everything. And then you've got, like, a tray you made where all the pieces that we need mid-game are in this one tray, and the trays are beveled, is that the correct word?
Yeah.
Right? So that the tokens slide out as opposed to like a little compartment you have to reach into.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just very nicely laid out. Now, what do you think about some of the like custom inserts that can be bought? Do you have any experience with those?
Yeah, what did we just play? With Steve.
Oh, Concordia.
Concordia.
Yep.
That was so... I love that. I love...
Wow. She tilted her head and smiled at me. Honey, buy me an insert for Christmas.
Custom inserts are amazing.
They're really nice. They're cost prohibitive to me because you pay the price of the game again. Now, Steve made his. He 3D printed his.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome way to go.
Yeah.
In my mind. And I don't want to take anything away from custom inserts because if you know you're going to play a game 10 times, 20 times...
Right.
And you can set it up. We did it with Gloomhaven.
Like,
it made sense there, but I tend to not play games that many times, and like I said, I'm pretty happy with baggies, and you like to sort cards.
I do like to sort cards.
And things like that, so
like Heart of Crown has great storage.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah, just kind of all the different values, so. Yeah, that's kind of what we've seen.
Has great storage, Dice Forge.
Yeah, well, Dice Forge, it all stays in the box. Right. Like, you just play out of the box and whatnot, so that's kind of a neat way to go.
Yeah.
In terms of all that, so. Cool, that's kind of our ideas on storage. I'm not afraid of baggies and things like that and organizing everything the way it goes. I'll throw all the player color pieces in one spot. Like, not a big deal. Kathy likes to sort all the cards and things like that. Sometimes some tuck boxes or some deck boxes to put everything in can be a good kind of way to sort cards and things, although hopefully most games have like a divider to store things up.
Yeah.
To some extent, it's not always just a big empty piece. Cardboard goes if it's just a piece of cardboard that held everything. I think you were just taking we had a punch party the other day with a bunch of like Essen games that came in.
Yep.
And you were trying to fit one in a box. I just toss that cardboard. Get that out of here. You know, we don't need that. Fit everything in the box. So kind of that element. Any other comments for storage?
No.
Awesome. With that, we'll wrap up episode 138. It's good to be back. Good to be talking to everybody. We're excited for this weekend with the 24-hour charity raising money for the Connecticut Children's Medical Center through Extra Life. We do this every year, so we'll see. I don't know if I'll do a full recap this year, but we'll see what we do in terms of all that. And PAX Unplugged is just around the corner. It is the end of October, and PAX Unplugged is the beginning of December.
Oh, my goodness.
So we are very close to going to Philadelphia and stumbling across Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell once again. As we're just looking for something to munch on, and we're like, ah, there's the Liberty Bell. We had no idea where we were. So that was good. You know what a lot of people did when they went down? They did an escape route. Maybe we should try to do an escape room. That'd be pretty fun with Brian and Larry.
They'd yeah, that would be really fun.
We'll hook up one of those.
Escape rooms are my favorite.
So, it'd be cool. All right, that's it for this episode 138. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I have been your host, The Brant.
And your co-host, Kathy.
And until next time, we hope you step into the portal.